We're here with Devin Youngs, and he's talking to us from his home in Chicago, Illinois, and we're in our home in Oakland, California.
It's February 22nd, 2008, and I'm Oliver Wise, and this is Eleanor Hansen-Wise.
Thanks for being here, Devin.
Thanks for having me.
Let's just get started with talking about you were there too, and why don't you just take us through how you went about just starting to create this project?
Okay, well, it comes from a couple of different ideas that I have kind of been working with, and the original idea had to do with a project I did with my father, which is on my website, and I got a lot of positive feedback from that. I don't know, it just got me thinking, this project with my father got me thinking about the weightiness of photographs, like, because he had these really beautiful answers to my questions, and I thought that the way they affected the pictures really resonated with me, because I feel like, I guess, a great responsibility with the people I take pictures of, and I also feel kind of fearful of my role in the process, and I just kind of wanted to indulge that more, and so that's kind of where the project originated.
And so these questions that you were asking, were you doing them face to face, or were they all written out ahead of time or afterwards?
It was all email exchange, but basically the way the process was is that and this was for my original project, and this was for You Were There Too, I asked these questions, which I call like relationship defining questions, kind of the things you wouldn't really ask people, that the people that you love, you wouldn't really ask them. And it's kind of the things that go assumed, which is kind of maybe a silly thing that we do in life. We assume a lot of things of people around us. But so what I would do is I'd ask the people these questions, and then I would photograph them after the fact. So we had had this exchange, but only through email or handwritten. But we'd had the exchange, and so then we had that kind of communication. And then I was interested to see how that was affected, or how that affected the portraits I took. Now, some of the pictures in the project come from before the time that the questions mm-hmm. were asked. The common denominator in all the pictures is that the people are aware of the camera and of me. So none of them are really candid. There was they were aware of my presence, and they were aware of the fact that their picture was being taken.
Did you go over, was it like the answers to the questions, were those part of the photo session anyway, or were they just sort of separate?
They were separate. I mean, the people that I used for this project knew the basis of the project, and I really gave people, I wanted to give people as many outs as possible, but I wanted to encourage them to participate as heavily as they would. So, you know, I guess my overall fear of with picture taking and taking photos of people, because my photographs are very personal and they're typically of people that I know, and more often than not people that I love in some way, that I just feel like a great responsibility with that. And a lot of people take pictures of models or strangers, and it's just a different ballgame. But for me, it's really important that a lot of the people I photograph are people that I have a relationship with. So there are three different things happening. There's me, how they feel about me, and how I feel about them, and then the camera. And it's a really interesting dynamic. So they were pretty aware of the whole process. I made it pretty clear that I was going to ask them these questions. They could answer them as thoroughly or as, you know, sparsely as they wanted to. And then from there, we would do some portraits.
Did you include the full text of their answers?
Almost. This is something, it was something I really struggled with, because at first I felt like this conviction that I needed to not edit the text. I wanted it to be as honest as possible. And I also sent the three people that participated in this project, they had the same questions, mm-hmm. and they were in the same order. And I told them they didn't have to answer all the questions if they didn't want to, but they all chose to answer all of the questions. But then as I began to put them together, I realized that I think editing the words in the same way that I edit photographs was a valid way of not doing them, not it's still being a just process. But so I did remove some things that I thought were maybe slightly excessive or not necessary, didn't help in any way, but I didn't change anyone's words. Mm-hmm. And I changed order of some of the words. But I also really wanted the photographs to be dynamic with the pictures. I wanted them to feed off of one another. And so that was part of the editing process too.
Do you think that this project has changed your relationships with David, Sarah, and Jennifer at all?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
It was funny because it was like when I got the first set of answers, I hadn't, you know, taken any photos specifically for the project. I had like a really intense reaction to it.
It was Jennifer?
Yeah. I felt really emotional about it for some reason. I mean, there are emotional things that she said, but it felt like, whoa, what am I getting into sort of thing. Like, did I bite off more than I can chew? Maybe I don't want to know these kind of things, you know? Even if they're nice, like, maybe it's best that they are left unsaid. Right. You know, maybe this is too indulgent. But as I started to put it together, it became, you know, with the images, it became more interesting to me. And just how they played with each other, how they interacted, and how they represented each other. I mean, I think that if you spend any time with the words and the pictures, and they're really representative of my relationships, even though they might just be a very standard portrait where, you know, the subject is just looking directly at the camera. Mm. The way they look at the camera is kind of uncannily represented in the way they use their words, I think. Mm-hmm. For me.
Do you think you'll continue this project with other participants?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something I want to do. It's a really time-consuming process. but it's something I want to do. You know, when I was talking through the project originally with a friend, he encouraged me to do it with people that I couldn't predict their answers, which I think would be a really interesting thing to do in the future. These answers weren't predictable, but they were people that I know I have a strong relationship with, you know, however it may be. And I think it would be really interesting to do something in the future with people that maybe my relationship was different, of different natures. But it also takes, I mean, it's a tech, either takes a willing participant or someone who's able to express that they're not willing, clearly.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by you feel a sense of responsibility to the people you take pictures of?
I think that it's just especially if it's people that you're in relationship with, you're representing them. I mean, they're representing themselves in some way. We all represent ourselves in how we dress and, you know, I guess when being photographed, how you look at the camera and how you interact with the camera. But I think something that always happens with my photography is people always ask me about the people that I've taken a picture of. So even if it's like a picture of an arm, you know, something that's not clear who it is, for some reason, there's something about the way that I take pictures that people are really curious about who it is and when that was and why. And it kind of freaked me out at first when I first started taking pictures because I didn't always want to answer.
Right.
And not for any specific reasons, but it just felt like maybe they were private moments and I didn't necessarily want to share, you know? And then I started thinking about people come in and out of our lives. And, you know, some people I've photographed in the past have left my life for one reason or another. And then suddenly you have this image that's lingering. And you could use that in a number of ways and in a number of situations. And I think it's a big responsibility if on some sort of broader moral level for me. Mm-hmm. You know, other people might feel differently. But for me, I feel like I have to represent people honestly, and you can do a lot of manipulation as a photographer. I mean, I could make a lot of things look like a lot of other things. But that's part of the magic of it. That's part of why it's beautiful. But I also, I guess I want to just attack the honest standpoint of taking pictures. And that's kind of why I wanted to, like, indulge this process.
That sort of brings up another question for me is, you know, where does your sentimentality end and where does detachment, because it's a good photo, start? You know, is that a really hard process to separate?
Absolutely. I mean, there are tons of pictures I have that people will tell me are crap. And I'll be like, I love that picture. That was such a special moment. I mean, I think that's hard for any kind of lifestyle or documentary type photographer, especially when you're in like that snapshot realm. I mean, because, you know, I have my camera with me at all times. So, and most of my pictures are based in my life. And so they all have sentimental value, even if it's like, you know, really negative. But you have to, I mean, at some point you have to be able to spend enough time with the pictures that they take on some broader meaning too. And I think the words actually really helped that for this project, because I could think in different terms rather than just a pretty picture. Although that's where I started in the editing process. I went through all the photographs I took and I took the ones that I thought were most beautiful. And then I started whittling those down with, you know, kind of the text that I had received and how they would play with each other.
Let's switch gears a little bit and just talk about some of your other projects. Your Placement of Self series. Maybe you could start off by just describing it for our listeners who haven't seen it.
I saw this. I've seen a number of people do similar series where they have a shutter release with their camera and photograph themselves in different settings. And I basically discovered this a couple of years ago, and I started playing with it because my parents own this house in Michigan. And 2 years ago, they put it on the market to sell. And it's my childhood home, and it's where I grew up. And it's the only home I was ever in. And it sat on 40 acres of wooded landscape. Mm. And it wasn't until I moved away from that area that I realized how beautiful that was and how important to me it was. So I started going back there for holidays, and I took a few pictures of myself in that setting with the shutter release. And as a side note, one of my friends asked me a while ago, like, what's with the shutter release? Like, why? I mean, is that just like a, you know, a visual thing? But for me, what that represents is just that it's me and the camera. So, you know, there was no one else there taking that photograph of mm-hmm. me. And it's just kind of a visual cue to know that it's a self-portrait and it's just us in the woods.
And they ask that because your camera has a self-timer or something?
No, it has a self-timer. It has a self-timer.
Right.
This is, it's purely a visual cue. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, it started there. And then it started to just be this idea of, on a basic level, how do I look in certain circumstances? You know, the first one is of me in my parents' woods. I've also done some photographs by Lake Michigan here in Chicago, and which has a really strong meaning for me because I grew up near Lake Michigan on the other side of the lake. And even though now I live in a major city and not in the woods like I did before, I still have that connection to that spot and that space, and then I place myself there. And then there are other pictures where you can see that I've removed myself from the picture, but the shutter released is still there, just kind of like the absence of myself in that space. So it's kind of just something I'm continuing to do. I took some more photos back by my house in Michigan over this Thanksgiving because they haven't, the house has been on the market for 2 years and the economy in Michigan is so awful. No one's buying the house. Wow. So it's just interesting that 2 years later, I'm still able to go back to this house that I thought I was done with.
Yeah.
Potentially. So yeah, that's kind of where I sit with that right now. It's kind of something that it might go on forever. I don't know.
It's also sort of another group of photos that are more like formal studies, like where you have different stages of you shaving or different expressions or body positions.
Yeah.
Maybe you could talk about those a little bit.
You know, it's funny because my friends make fun of me because I photograph myself a lot. and really, in all honesty, I'm sure there's some level of like self-exploration and, you know, narcissism involved or something. But in all honesty, like as a photographer, I talked earlier about feeling the weight of photographing someone and the power you have in that and then the pressure you have in that. And with myself, it's like the easiest because I'll do whatever I say. I'll go wherever I want to go, you know, whatever stupid move I want. So I've kind of I've done a lot of self-portraiture as, you know, as a experimentation. But
you don't have to worry about it as much.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's really interesting because people react very strongly to pictures of me. And they'll tell me what they think about it, too. Like, it's funny because people will tell me if I look bad in a picture. And like, well, you know, it's not a glamour shot. You know, it's not like my Sears portrait or whatever. But but I also think that has to do with the whole MySpace kind of thing that people view self-portraiture very differently now that they have online profiles to present themselves, and I'm sure I fall into that in some category, but I think that that's why people feel so like they have very strong judgments about taking pictures of oneself. But you know, a lot of my self-portraiture happens at times where significant things happen in my life, after significant conversations or, you know, I don't know, just times when I need to self-reflect. I read this article with Wolfgang Tillmans, where he took a portrait of himself in his partner's studio after he had died of AIDS, and he had cleaned out his studio and he photographed himself at the end. And I was just thinking how amazing that is to be able to document that point in time where you had gone through this. And it's just a point of reflection. And so a lot of my self-portraits come from those spaces in my life. And then some of them are just like ridiculous experimentation too, you know. And a lot of stuff I've learned on myself I've been able to use on other people too. So,
like what?
Just definitely like light, you know, use of light is really big. And I do a pretty good job of when I photograph myself keeping notes on what worked and what didn't. You know, expressions. I know I've become kind of an actor in some ways in how I look at the camera and how I can work with it. And it's funny because the more I do this sort of thing, it becomes more difficult to just be honest with the camera because I know the way certain things look. So that's something actually more recently I've been thinking a lot about. And I think that's something I do best in my Placement of Self series. It really is just an honest, those are very honest moments. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that has to do with environment.
Why, you say that, you know, some of your self-portraits are after you've had a significant moment or something like that, but you don't let, you know, in the title of the picture, you don't let the viewer know that. It's sort of like your own. Are you more interested in how that moment comes across afterwards without the information? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay.
No. Yeah. I mean, that's what's been interesting about this project, too. because I wonder how much we should tell sometimes. I think that's a really interesting kind of, I mean, you can really affect how people think by titles.
Mm-hmm.
Setting, you know, is obviously huge. I mean, that's what I think most about in my relationship with my photographs is, you know, I'm really exploring like the aesthetics of a relationship. So even if it's to myself, what does it look like? You know, how did I feel? How did that physically manifest itself? And in that space, you know, how was I relating to the space? How was my subject relating to the space? What lines came out of that? I'm really interested in color and line and light, and like, how did that happen and why? Because it's not as simple as just, oh, I was there. We're all interacting with our space, and we're all interacting with the light and the camera and the photographer. And so I think that's what I'm most concerned of, because certain things will just arise, you know, from those situations. And I want to give those visual cues, particularly with self-portraits, because it's just, it's easier to try to shoot for visual cues than to say too much, because I probably get myself in trouble. But, and that's another reason I didn't include in this project, I didn't include my own words. All the words in the project are the subjects, and I really wanted them to speak on behalf of us. So you know I'm there, you know I'm present, you know that, you know, I'm the person taking the pictures, and you know that I'm the instigator, but I really wanted the person to be answering my questions and be speaking on our behalf, to really have them talk about our relationship.
Let's talk about photo blogging a little bit. You're an avid photo blogger on LiveJournal. You know, what impact does photo sharing have on your photography?
It's huge. It impacts everything. You know, I was just thinking about this earlier today, because in all honesty, blogging is the reason I started taking pictures, I think. Like, seriously taking pictures and regularly taking pictures. It's weird, because some people have a really adverse reaction to the fact that there's a lot of crap on the internet.
Yep.
I just read this thing. There's this blog called Conscientious, and it's this guy named Jörg Kohlberg, and he always like posts photographers that he's interested in, or someone that sent him. And he posted this link to this kid on Flickr, and he made some kind of snide comment about how he doesn't normally post links to Flickr pages because of the comments, and because the annoying comments, and because people don't edit when they use Flickr, or, you know, whatever, LiveJournal, whatever. Which is totally true. I mean, people post the most obnoxious comments, you know, like, hey, you look hot in this picture, or, you know, totally beside the point. Right. But at the same time, I think there's so much validity in that community, and getting constant feedback. And however accurate the feedback is, you have to learn how to wade through that. I mean, obviously, if I wanted to, I could find people on the internet to tell me I'm amazing all the time. But that's the beauty of the internet, right? There's something like that. However weird you are, you can find someone else that is there. But there are these incredible communities right now, and they're lively and they're active and dynamic, and there are people that are finding each other that are artistically like-minded. Mm-hmm. And it's inspiring to me every day, because I have these communities online, and I sit at a desk during the day, and, you know, I have my little RSS feeder up, and I have, you know, great things, great art coming my way all day long. And, you know, I'll totally steal ideas from that stuff all the time. So, and people, you know, people, they tell you what they think sometimes too. They'll tell you negative stuff too, through those situations. So, it's nice. But I also think that people like to read blogs because they like to feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
But there are tons of people that follow my Flickr page and my blog that I have no idea who they are. And, mm-hmm. and you know, that also ties into what we were talking about earlier with just responsibility and subjects of photographs. My parents are the subjects of a lot of my photographs, and a number of my friends have met them, and they feel like they already know them, which is really interesting because, like, they'll come up, you know. I remember one time my parents were here, and this girl that I know came up. She's like, "Oh yeah," she's like, "I see you guys on the internet all the time." And my parents were just like, they're like, They just smiled and nodded, but they know that there are pictures of them, but they don't know to what magnitude people are looking at them.
Yeah, do they go to your? Do they follow your sites? Or
my parents have dial-up internet; they can barely check their email. So.
Oh, wow.
I show them, you know, I've shown them a lot of pictures, and they're really, really good sports about letting me photograph them. I mean, really, every time I go home, we have some sort of photo session. It's kind of, but they don't get it. You know, they don't get the whole internet interactive thing that happens that I'm a participant in.
Do you think it's easier these days to get started as a photographer because of photo blogging and these communities that you've become a part of?
You definitely can get attention if you want to. I think if you were to look at photographers that are fairly well known right now, some of them probably have blogs, but a lot of them would never do anything like a Flickr page. It's dangerous, I think, when you put too much of your stuff out there all the time.
Yeah.
And that's something I grapple with. I love to post things daily. I think if you can keep an audience regularly, I mean, I'm interested in seeing what people that I like are doing daily. So I think that has value. But I think there you can put too much of yourself out there, and people, it's hard to wade through all of that. And so especially to rise above. Because there are hundreds of thousands of talented photographers that are putting pictures out there all the time. But at some point, you have to learn how to set yourself apart and not just be another Flickr page.
So Flickr sounds like the bottom of the barrel for you.
What do you mean by that?
Well, you have to decide on your levels of filtration, you know. And it seems like you have a good... a system where your website is sort of the curated Davin Youngs, and then your live journal is like slightly less
the daily.
Then maybe.
I guess you're right. Wow, you guys got it figured out. yeah, it's funny though. I think about this too. So like on top of whatever pictures I take with my film cameras, I have a little digital camera that I'll like photograph my friends at birthday parties or whatever. So, but I won't post those anywhere. I'd send those to my friends through email, but I wouldn't necessarily post those on my Flickr page, you know, because I wouldn't want people to think that those silly snapshots are like my real photographs, which is interesting.
Yeah, you need a fourth site that's below all of them.
I can't have another. Actually, though, you all should check out, and anyone who's listening, there's this project called Fjord Photo, which I don't know if you've seen, but this photographer in New York, I think he's like 19 or something, really young, but totally a part of like the Flickr generation, gathered all these young photographers that have basically used the internet to self-promote. And all are very, very similar in nature. It's like, I think the website is fjordphoto.org, which is F-J-O-R-D, photo, all one word, .org. But all the images are strikingly similar. And they're all great. I mean, and I'm included in that group. I think that they're all really interesting. But I think that all these people are extremely influenced by each other, and they're all in the online communities together. Because I know a huge number of the names on the list, and I think there are like 60 photographers involved. And those are a lot of those people I've known for a number of years now, just through the internet. So I think there's this whole kind of fascinating culture that's evolving, and that project is probably going to turn into a book. So It's fascinating. It's something. It's interesting. It's going to be interesting how what rises to the top in the midst of all of that.
Right. How do you decide on your levels of filtration? You know, how do you decide on the? You know, I'm sure that you just have so many photos. How do you filter it?
Yeah, but at the same time, you have to have something every day. Like, do you feel like the stress? You know, the stress to put.
Totally. I mean, you know, there have certainly been spans of time where I haven't posted a picture. But, well, gosh, you know, when it comes down to it, so if I get a roll of film back, which I do, I mean, I shoot a few rolls of film a week at least. So, and oftentimes on a weekend, I'll shoot like 10 rolls of film. So I go through a lot of pictures, and so when I get a roll of film back, I'll take the roll and I get them all scanned, and so I put them on my computer and I'll pull out the ones that I think are good, and then I sit with those for a while, and then maybe a few of those I would post, you know, on Flickr or on LiveJournal, and then from that, after I've spent time with images, there will be a few that will just kind of arise to me. And not all of my images are on the internet. I mean, I sit with a lot of other pictures for a long time and, you know, have some from years ago that I haven't ever done anything with, but I just kind of sit with them and try to figure out what they represent and what they could possibly be used for in the future. So, but there's definitely like this temptation to just like put it all out there. I'm like, you know, oh my God, I got an awesome picture. Flickr, Flickr, Flickr. Right now. It's like the instant gratification.
Right. When you say you spend time with the photos, do you print them out? Do you just look at them a lot on the computer?
Yeah. I print a number of them out. I've painted my bedroom white. And oftentimes I'll post images in my bedroom, so I literally will sleep with them. But I spend that kind of time. You know, some are on my computer. I'm pretty regular about going back through old stuff. So like every month or so, I'll spend a few hours just going back through stuff and maybe recalling some images that I had forgotten about, or spending some time with some images that had stood out to me in the past. And, you know, there's some pictures that mean the most, you know. They mean the most aesthetically. They're the most visually pleasing. They have value that's greater than, you know, just the picture themselves. And you hope that people will like them. Oh, I know one thing I was going to talk about.
All right, cool.
Because in the book, some of the images are like damaged or exposed, ugly. Yeah. And I just wanted to make mention that that's done purposefully, because I use film when I take pictures. And number one, I think the colors that exposed film create can be really beautiful. But I also like that's something specific to film. I guess this is kind of a subject that is arising in a number of different areas, but I like to draw attention to my medium. So, for instance, with the placement of self series, you know, the idea of using the shutter release to draw awareness to the fact that there's a camera there, right, and that I'm in control of the camera. And then the other thing I do use sometimes is film that's not been properly exposed or something like that, to just draw attention to the filminess and the presence of the camera in the film and between me and the subject.
What makes you stick with film?
It just has, you know, has a quality. Yeah. It's definitely the LP, compared to the CD. I'm not opposed to digital. It's just not my style. And plus, I just love going and picking up pictures. Like, it's the most exciting process to go to that counter and, you know, pay my money and then get the pictures. I love it. So, you know, Polaroid just announced that they're not gonna.
Yeah, we heard that.
Which was a long time coming, I suppose.
Fuji still makes it.
What's that?
Fuji still makes it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it'll disappear completely. Although I did send my mom to like Walmart to get as much Polaroid.
Yeah, seriously.
I was like, buy it. I know they'll have it at the Walmart near you. but you know, that it's like all, you know, film and digital and the Polaroid film. There are all these different special mediums. I don't think one better than the other. I just think they all hold a different value. And for me, I love 35 millimeter, you know, film, and I love the graininess of it. And a lot of people call my pictures intimate, and I think a lot of that has to do with the film too. I think people associate that quality of picture with a certain level of intimacy. So I want to keep that as long as I can.
Do you think that you're ever going to learn the chemistry, or do you don't see that as a important part of the process?
You mean as far as developing film?
Yeah. And your prints.
Oh, I mean, I know it.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, no, I know the process. The cool thing is now you can get scans done of negatives, and you can do a lot of, you know, digital manipulation of negatives. And there are a number of different printing processes now. You know, you can do C prints from a digital scan. There are so many ways in which you can handle film. I don't have the time to do all the processing myself, or the means, really. And you can do it so inexpensively now, too, that it's not worth it to a certain extent. But as long as I have trusted people, I don't mind having someone else do it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Do you think that carrying around a big camera with you all the time has changed the way that you see things, or like, do you identify as a photographer all the time when you have your camera? Like, do you, you know what?
Yeah. No, I never say I'm a photographer. I always say I take pictures. It's too much pressure. If I just say I'm going to take your picture, then it means I could just be, you know, snapping your birthday party picture. And then if it turns out great, they'll be pleasantly surprised. And if it doesn't turn out well, then it's no skin off my back. But yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes there have been times, actually a perfect example of this is David and Sarah, for these books, I went to visit them. And I was with them for a very short period of time. And my initial instinct when I got there was to pull the camera out immediately. But I realized that I really wanted to spend time with them before we engaged in, you know, the picture taking process. And so I purposefully, you know, left my camera in my bag and just spent some time talking with them, because it really, although it just changes. I mean, it changes the environment, it changes the setting. People are very aware of it, and they perform for it in some ways. So there are times when I have to purposefully tell myself to put it away, because if I'm interested in you, chances are I'd be taking your picture, you know, our whole conversation. Really obnoxious, but yeah. So it definitely changes how I see the world. And there are times when I get really pissed off because I don't have my camera with me, and I, you know, it's like the perfect moment. And of course, it's the one time I left it at home.
Well, yeah. I think that's it. Thank you very much.
Cool. Yeah, totally. Thank you guys for all your work on this. I really, you know, I really appreciate the opportunity. It's been a learning process and really interesting for me. So I do really appreciate it.
No.
Well, thanks.
It's our pleasure.
We appreciate your work. Thanks, Devin.
Yeah.
Thank you.